Welcome to another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired Word. Please join me in Deuteronomy chapter 28, verse 45, as we begin today. We're looking at the blessing and cursing section of this Moses' final address to the Israeli people. He's delivering these words on the first day of the 11th month of the 40th year. And he is really taking the Israelis to task over what will happen if they blow off God's word, if they do not live up to the covenant of holiness. The covenant has great conditionality attached to it. Do the word, be blessed. Don't do the word, be cursed. And Moses, whom I think is very concerned as a prophet, his students will not keep the covenant. I think he is so very concerned about that, that he is hammering away on the cursing aspect of not keeping the covenant here. And so he's also revealing some of the details of what will happen to Israel many centuries later, when they first go into Assyrian captivity, then into Babylonian captivity, and eventually the city of Jerusalem and the temple will be destroyed by the hands of the Romans. And so there's a lot of different times that this curse for not keeping the covenant, for not doing things God's way, comes to pass. Deuteronomy 28:45. All these curses shall come upon you and pursue you and overtake you till you are destroyed. Now, don't think annihilated here. We know that as long as heaven and earth survives, so that's going to be until Jesus returns and we get a new heaven and a new earth. But as long as heaven and earth survives, there will always be Israelis. Always. So they will not cease to exist as a people group. So the destroyed here carries with it the context of not having a very good life, being on the downside of things. So all these curses shall come upon you and pursue you and overtake you till you are destroyed, broken, because you did not obey the voice of He who is your God to keep His commandments and His statutes that He commanded you. They shall be a sign and a wonder against you and your offspring forever. In the previous section, it had talked about the Israelis would be like this negative example that people would talk about, you know, in quiet terms, in hushed terms. Wow, did you see what happened to them? They must have been really bad in obedience to their God to have Him come down on them like that, that sort of thing. And so that's the example here too. They will serve as an example of what happens when you blow God off. Verse 47, because you did not serve He who is your God with joyfulness and gladness of heart. See, that's the positive. That would have been under the blessing thing. But because you did not serve He who is your God with joyfulness and gladness of heart, because of the abundance of all the things, therefore you shall serve your enemies, whom He who is will send against you, in hunger and thirst, in nakedness, and lacking everything. So they will be oppressed by different people groups during the history after they go into Assyrian captivity, after they go into Babylonian captivity, and even after they get scattered after the destruction of Jerusalem by the Romans. Now, that doesn't mean anybody should jump on board with giving Jewish people a bad time. That was the sort of anti-Semitism excuse used by certain people within the church, and I'm using air quotes there because I don't think the true church people would have done things like this, where basically anything you did to a Jew was a good thing. Any bad thing you did to a Jew was a good thing for God. And that's just not appropriate. The book of Romans, chapters 9, 10, and 11, make it very clear that God wanted his covenant people, old covenant people, to remain in a category of special treatment. And the truth was that the church, as it became more and more Gentile, should have continued being more and more evangelistic, reaching out in consideration and mercy to the ethnic Israelis rather than trying to cheat them and abuse them and misuse them. Back to the text. He will put a yoke of iron on your neck until he has destroyed you, or broken you, basically. Verse 49. Now listen to this. He who is will bring a nation against you from afar, from the end of the earth, swooping down like an eagle, a nation whose language you do not understand. Now, the three groups that I've already cited as prime examples of when this came to pass, the Assyrians, they actually had an emblem that looked similar to an eagle. I think it was a vulture, but the word eagle in Hebrew can also refer to a vulture type of bird. But the Assyrian language, the Israelis did not know whenever they were being set up for the beginning of the Assyrian captivity. The Babylonians also had some symbols that included eagles or eagle's wings on lions as part of their symbols and their imagery. And the Israelis did not at that time understand the Babylonian tongue, but they soon would. And they ended up going into Babylonian captivity. The third example that I keep using would be the Romans. And we know that the Romans had as their chief military standard an eagle. And Latin was not widely known among the Israeli people whenever they lost their city, their temple, and their country in AD 70 and in the decades that followed. And so the imagery here ends up being repeated several different times during the future of Israel. Moses knew about it, at least prophetically enough to write it down. Speak it first and then write it down. Verse 50, a hard-faced nation who shall not respect the old or show mercy to the young, which was true in each of those instances. It shall eat the offspring of your cattle and the fruit of your ground until you are destroyed. It also shall not leave you grain, wine, or oil, the increase of your herds, or the young of your flock until they've caused you to perish. So they come in and basically take all Israeli resources. They shall besiege you in all your towns until your high and fortified walls in which you trusted come down throughout all your land. Now, Moses is writing this. He's saying it first, and then he writes it down. Before the Israelis go into the Promised Land, one of the things that they were concerned about in the Promised Land is that the Amorites, the Canaanites, had cities that were fortified with great big high walls. Well, they're going to be going in and taking those cities anyway with God's help. In the case of Jericho, the high wall around it comes down at God's supernatural command. The blowing of the trumpets on the seventh day when they went around seven times and blew the trumpets. Those walls are not going to be a problem for the Israelis. Well, Moses verbally describes how in the future the Israelis will be living in fortified cities with high walls around them. And they will think they are good to go. And then God will bring in these foreign nationals, these foreign armies, and because of the Israeli sin, he will do to them what he had them do to the Canaanites. So, verse 52 continues, "They shall besiege you in all your towns throughout your land, which he who is your God has given you, and then you shall eat the fruit of your womb, the flesh of your sons and your daughters, whom he who is your God has given you, in the siege and in the distress with which your enemies shall distress you." One of the most heart-rending things that happen during sieges. Sieges are intended to put great pressure upon the resources of the besieged, to make them thirsty, to make them hungry. And we know besieged peoples begin eating junk. I mean, they'll chew their leather shoes. They will eat straw. They'll be digging through the manure to see if there's anything that might still be edible that wasn't digested the first time through. They do all sorts of disgusting things because they're so hungry. But the epitome of shameful things that happen during besiegements is the retreat into cannibalism. And not just simply eating the dead, but eating the young, eating the babies, the children. And there are a couple of different examples in later books where Israel, because of their sin, is under siege, and people are eating their babies. And so Moses is already saying that's how bad it's going to get if you choose to engage in sin. Verse 54, continuing along that same theme, "The man who is the most tender and refined among you," so the person that used to be just so respected, you wouldn't think he'd ever lift his finger to hurt a fly. Well, he will begrudge food to his brothers, so he won't share what little food he has. He won't give it to the wife he embraces, or even to the last of the children whom he has left. So he will be super, super selfish and greedy with what little food he has. Verse 55, "so that he will not give to any of them any of the flesh of his children whom he's eating, because he has nothing left in the siege and in the distress with which the enemy shall distress you in all your towns." So he'll be eating some of his own kids' bodies, and he won't share it with even his closest relatives because he is so hungry and so selfish in that hunger. And actually, that, again, that speaks to one of the future history passages where two women are fighting over a dead baby because one is saying, "We ate my child already, and now she's not sharing her child with me." That's how disgusting things will get when sin brings judgment. Verse 56, "the most tender and refined woman among you who would not venture to set the sole of her foot on the ground because she's so delicate and tender, meaning she tiptoes everywhere. She will begrudge to her husband that she embraces to her son and to her daughter her afterbirth, her placenta that comes out from between her feet and her children whom she bears, because lacking everything, she will eat them secretly in the siege and in the distress with which your enemy shall distress you in your towns. So it will be bad, Moses says, if you blow God off and sin. It will get horrendously bad. And he is 100% correct in his prophecy. Verse 58, if you are not careful to do all the words of this law that are written in this book, remember, he is going to write down everything that he has said on this day. More than likely, someone is transcribing it for him as he speaks. We have people today that can do shorthand, that can take down notes very rapidly as people are speaking. They had people that had that sort of ability in the past. So everything that he is speaking will eventually be written. So if you are not careful to do all the words of this law that are written in this book, that you may fear this glorious and awesome name, he who is your God, then he who is will bring on you and your offspring extraordinary afflictions, afflictions severe and lasting, and sicknesses grievous and lasting. Now, I want to emphasize something here for future consideration. When we get to some of the historical accounts of how things go badly against the Israelis, and the Assyrians come in, and the Babylonians come in, and the Romans come in, it is too often forgotten that the reason those things were happening was because of sin. And so we need to make sure we emphasize that. It's not happening out of the blue. It's not happening by accident or randomly. It's not even really the aggressiveness of those aggressors, because many of them were very aggressive. The reason it's happening is because of sin. And Moses is predicting it ahead of time, getting it down in writing, so that hopefully a lesson can be learned. Verse number 60. He, meaning God, will bring upon you again all the diseases of Egypt of which you were afraid. That's a little bit of information we didn't have before. Apparently it scared the Israelis seeing all the things that God was doing to the Egyptians right there in front of them. So he says, he will bring upon you again all the diseases of Egypt of which you were afraid, and they shall cling to you. Every sickness also, every affliction that is not recorded in the book of this law, he who is will bring upon you until you are destroyed, till you're broken. Because of sin, remember. Whereas you were as numerous as the stars of heaven. Remember, that's the Abrahamic promise, is that Abraham, your seed will be as numerous as the stars in the sky. So Moses says, while you were once as numerous as the stars in the heaven, you shall be left few in number because you did not obey the voice of he who is your God. That's the point. And as he who is took delight in doing you good and multiplying you, so he who is will take delight in bringing ruin upon you and destroying you, and you shall be plucked off the land that you are entering to take possession of it. Now, don't overapply this idea that God would be happy to do all of these things in judgment against the Israelis. It's idiomatic, it's expressive, it is contrast and comparison. It breaks God's heart, we know, from other passages to have to judge sin. Some of us who got ourselves in trouble more often than we should have would sometimes have our parents say to us that, I don't want to do this. I don't want to have to spank you. I don't want to have to punish you. But you're giving me no choice. That's the sort of thing that Moses is trying to express here. Verse 64. And he who is will scatter you among all peoples from one end of the earth to the other. And there you shall serve other gods of wood and stone, which neither you nor your fathers have known. That's, again, the idea that if you're going to engage in the worship of other gods and goddesses, God's not going to let you do it here in the Promised Land. He's going to scatter you into foreign places, and you can do your little worshiping of other gods and goddesses there. Verse 65, and among those nations you shall find no respite. There shall be no resting place for the sole of your foot, but he who is will give you there a trembling heart and failing eyes and a languishing soul. See, it's going to be a bad life. Your life shall hang in doubt before you. Night and day you shall be in dread and have no assurance of your life. This is actually quite descriptive of what it would have been like for the first people that were exiled because of their sins, leaving the land of their birth, the land of their life, not because they wanted to, but because they were forced to do so. And because of the siege, they'd have been hungry, they would have lost loved ones, and they arrive in this new place that they don't know. They're surrounded by people that speak languages that they don't understand. They're put into little bitty houses, not much room, not many supplies. And so this is how they would have felt. Very broken down and frightened and hopeless. That's the description. Verse 67, in the morning you shall say, oh, if it were only evening. And then at evening you shall say, oh, if it were only morning. Because of the dread that your heart shall feel and the sight that your eyes shall see. See, you are going to rue the day that you broke God's covenant. Because you will hate your life. You will wish that it would just pass away. Verse 68, and he who is will bring you back in ships to Egypt, a journey that I promise that you should never make again. And there you shall offer yourselves for sale to your enemies as male and female slaves, but there will be no buyer. Now, there are some examples in the history of Israel where the slaves, Jewish slaves, were taken back to Egypt and sold. Now, when I say back to Egypt, we're talking about the fact that they had their grand exodus from there under Moses at God's direction. And God said, I don't want you to have to go back there. I'm not going to make you go back there. But here prophetically, Moses says, but that's where some of you will end up. Some of you will end up sold on the slave market in Egypt. And some of you you're going to be in such bad condition that nobody's going to even want to buy you. You're going to be that unwanted. And it's all because of sin. Never forget that. Chapter 29. These are the words of the covenant that he who is commanded Moses to make with the people of Israel in the land of Moab, besides the covenant that he had made with them at Horeb. So the book of Deuteronomy is all about restating the history and the giving of the law and the details of the covenant and now the blessings and cursings and the warnings of what's going to happen if you don't stick with God. So all that's now been laid out. They had the original covenant provided to them right around the time of Pentecost in the first year of the Exodus. So now is a renewal time. This whole new grown-up generation and the generations that followed them, they're going to be given the chance to agree to this covenant of their own free will choice. Verse 2, Moses summoned all Israel and said to them, "You have seen all that He who is did before your eyes in the land of Egypt, to Pharaoh, to all his servants, to all his land, the great trials that your eyes saw, the signs, those great wonders." Now, remember, it's only going to be those in their 50s that were teenaged kids back at the time of the Exodus that will have a pretty clear recollection of what Moses is talking about here. And they are the new leaders. They are the members of the Sanhedrin. They are the grandfathers and the grandmothers of the Israelis at this time. And so Moses is trying to reach out to them as the representatives of what happened 40 years earlier. But to this day, He who is has not given you a heart to understand or eyes to see or ears to hear. So even up to this point, there's still a problem. You're still not understanding how significant all of this is and how serious you need to take it. And then Moses gets personal, and I think this is where we're going to have to break off here. "I have led you 40 years in the wilderness." See, he's not going to be around anymore. And so he is trying to impress upon them, take this serious. And with that in mind, mark your place. We'll get right back here next time we're into the Word.